Hello and welcome to the British Equestrian Podcast. Now, April is Stress Awareness Month, so we thought this would be a really great topic to look at. So that's exactly what we're doing. The focus of the campaign this year is the small positive actions that we can take to improve our overall well-being and generally help us get through life at a nice, easy pace. Because life with horses, as we all know, it comes with times of stress. They're brilliant stress busters, but they do also, you know, bring a few little ups and downs to everyday life, regardless of whatever level you're riding at, competing at, whether you've just got horses at home. So to find out a little bit more about stress, what it actually is, how it can affect us, and as I say, some of these small positive steps we can all take, I am joined by Lainey Lightfoot from our World Class programme. She is a performance psychologist and she's been with the programme since 2016, and she is one of the driving forces behind our Perform Well Mental Wellbeing programme. Lainey is a BASES accredited sports scientist and has a master's degree in sports psychology. Welcome, Lainey.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, Rachel.
Well, let's start at the sort of the basic level of this. What actually is stress?
Yeah, I think when we think about what stress is, we can start to distinguish between physical stress and psychological stress. So if I start with physical stress, this is stress that our body experiences. So think about, for instance, when we're dehydrated, you know, our body will tell us that it's stressed via thirst. And then because we experience that thirst, then we go and seek out water to hydrate ourselves and sort out the stress, basically. Or if we experience a very kind of short term physical crisis like an injury, and our bodies tend to be brilliant at handling these types of short term physical stresses. We come equipped with physiological adaptations through the fight, flight, freeze response to manage these sorts of stressors. But psychological stress is quite different, and it's a lot more recent. So we can now get stressed thinking about the possibility of something that might happen in a week's time or a couple of weeks' time. So, you know, you might be riding the horse in a training session and there's a show coming up at the weekend and the training session doesn't go well. And then all of a sudden we start worrying and feeling stressed about the show at the weekend. Or we might be riding, something doesn't quite feel right, and then our mind starts to worry about ringing the vet and what might be wrong and the consequences and financial implications, or we worry about relationships or even things like contemplating our own mortality. So then we switch on with psychological stress, we switch on this same system that was designed to deal with very short-term physical crises. But the thing is, we don't tend to be as good at being aware of this psychological stress or making efforts to deal with it and respond with it. So often what we do is we just kind of sit with stress and say that we feel stressed. And actually then when we get this short-term stress for days and days on end, then that becomes chronic stress. And that can be quite serious. And then inherent in this idea of psychological stress, is the idea that we don't feel in control of the situation. We don't feel like we've got the resources or the ability to cope with whatever it is that's presenting itself. So it's our perception of the situation is really important in this idea of psychological stress. And then I guess in terms of what causes it, sometimes psychological stress is imposed upon us. So things that happen in our life that we've not got control over, you know, someone becomes unwell, we go through something traumatic, big changes are happening at work, and this causes that psychological stress reaction in us. But often and quite frequently, it's more self-imposed. We can make our lives more stressful than they need to be by worrying, by ruminating, by crystal ball gazing and predicting the future and thinking about the what ifs, and all those sorts of things that happen. The other thing I recognize quite a lot in working with people, decision making can be something that causes lots of stress. Because we can get caught up into thinking that, you know, we've got an important decision, there's a right decision and a wrong decision. And we don't recognize kind of those shades of gray and that decision making is always just a best guess, really.
Yeah, I think that's quite a key point there. As you say, that the fact that a lot of the time this is our own creation in a way, and we're very good at blowing things out of proportion and making them feel worse than they might initially be because you get stuck in your own head about them, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what about then, you mentioned in there about how sometimes we don't always recognise that what we're feeling is stress. Yeah. What are some of the ways then that stress might manifest itself in, you know, might become more apparent either to us or to people around us?
Yeah, So because, as I say, because of the kind of hormones involved in the stress response, some of the things that we'll notice are actual physical symptoms. So that might be, for example, we notice our heart rate increasing. We might notice that sleep becomes difficult. It's harder to sleep. Changes in our appetite. We might feel sick or dizzy. We might notice problems with fatigue, for example. So there'll be a physical element to it. And then there's also an emotional element to it as well. So it might be that we notice that we're struggling with low mood. We feel panicky. We're getting quite moody. We're irritable. And then there'll also be symptoms that we call cognitive, so to do with how we think. So we might feel quite overwhelmed. We might notice that we're worrying more than normal. Decision-making, like problems with decision-making, like I just spoke about. And then equally, some of the things that we'll notice will be behavioural. So these would also be things that other people would see. So not being able to relax, being quite snappy with people. Maybe we eat too much or we eat too little. I think if we reflect, we fall in one of those camps. When we're stressed, we overeat or we stop eating. Likewise with sleep, we either sleep too much or we don't get enough sleep. And then we might start to see people using unhelpful coping techniques as well. So that might be alcohol, that might be drugs, that might be gambling. I think important thing to recognize is everyone's unique. So there'll be some commonality, but it's really important to be aware of what that kind of stress profile looks like for you.
Yeah, definitely. And as you say, if you're sort of aware of how that might be manifesting itself, then that means that you can probably look for the warning signs, even if you're not identifying what you're feeling is stress resulting, but you're thinking, right, actually, okay, I'm really not sleeping very well at the moment. I'm not, you know, I'm feeling quite low or whatever. That means you can then dial it back and think, okay, actually, maybe there's a root cause in this, and that is where all this is coming from.
Yeah, a really, really important point that you've made there, Rachel. If you think about it, stress is actually a healthy reaction that is meant to feel uncomfortable. Stress is nature's way of saying to you something is wrong and you've got to act to put it right. Like in the same way as with physical stress, you feel thirsty, so you go and get yourself a drink. You don't just sit there saying, oh my God, I feel really thirsty. So it can be very helpful to think of stress in kind of three distinct phases. First is we get this alerting stage, which is where our mind kind of releases this cascade of hormones and neurotransmitters through the body to act as messengers. So these are things like cortisol, adrenaline, noradrenaline are the main ones people probably will have heard of. And it's the job of these to kind of course through the body and make us feel uncomfortable. So make us panic and ruminate and give us some of those physical symptoms that I just spoke about. And then once that's happened, we enter what's called the resilience phase. So again, nature has given us this resilience hormone called DHEA. And when we get a surge of this hormone, it rises very rapidly and it helps us to be really proactive in dealing with the stress. So it's at this point that we can then intervene and do something about it. If we don't intervene or if we start to use poor coping strategies, then that's actually when we enter the stressed state. And that's when cortisol, the stress hormone that probably most people have heard of, rises really high and it knocks out this resilience hormone. So yeah, absolutely really helpful to see stress as something that we can use rather than something to be engaged with. And if we're aware of what we start to notice, then we can start to engage, we can start to put that plan in place really quickly.
Which brings us on quite nicely then. So what maybe are some of the techniques and the things you can use then to try and get yourself through this stressful episode?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think stress is often like the symptom that we experience, and we can sometimes get really bogged down in the treacle of trying to manage the stress, whereas it can be more helpful to take a bit of a step back and, like you said before, look at, you know, what's the cause of our stress, what's behind the surface, what's beneath the surface, where's the stress coming from, and making a plan to deal with that. So I think one of my first suggestions is, like, when we recognize we're feeling stressed, is just to ask ourselves a really simple question, which is, what's the plan? Like to recognize there's going to be this resilience phase that we can move into. What's my plan going to be in that resilience phase? That said, like, there are lots of kind of lifestyle things that can help as well, day-to-day things that we can do. So for example, focusing on sleep and getting good sleep hygiene. So we know, most of us, if we reflect, we know that when we're stressed, things that are stressing us feel a million times worse at night, and we tend to lose perspective. So focusing on trying to get good sleeping can be really helpful. Getting outside and getting some exercise, you know, the endorphins associated with that. Being outside in nature. Again, there's a line of thought that says being around nature kind of helps us to appreciate something bigger than us. So it can put some of our stresses and problems into perspective. Making sure that we're talking about our problems and the things that are stressing us, connecting with people, using that as an opportunity. And again, even then, sometimes if we're struggling to think, what's the plan? Someone else might have some ideas to help. And another thing that can be really helpful is kind of pursuing our goals and pursuing our interests. So one of the things we know is that if we feel successful in our endeavors, then we get a rise in testosterone. And if testosterone is high, then that's going to suppress cortisol, which is the stress hormone. So I think what's really important within that is thinking about how are we defining success. So it's not just about kind of setting goals that are outcome based and achieving these really fabulous things. It's about thinking what's going to make me feel successful, whether that's, you know, I've set a small goal and I've tried really hard in working towards that goal.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, going back to that sort of being out in nature and things like that, I already mentioned it in the intro, horses, they can often be a cause of stress in our lives, but they are, being around them actually does have that very positive mental effect on you. And it can, you know, if you're feeling stressed, it can really help to calm you down and bring you into a better place. At least that's certainly what I find.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And there are lots of studies, Rachel, that would back that up as well, to say that being around horses, being around animals can reduce cortisol, reduce that stress hormone, and promotes the release of another hormone called oxytocin, which, again, people have probably heard of as the love hormone, or it's the hormone that's released to promote maternal bonding. But I also think that there's indirect things that are helpful from working with horses as well. So it gets us outside, it gets us exercising, even if we don't really want to. And sometimes it allows us to engage in those more like mindful activities. So things like grooming, for example, just there, like being there and in the moment with the horse, that can have lots of positive impact as well.
Yeah, certainly. And certainly for me, like even just something like mucking out and skipping out a stable, it's that sort of methodical actions, and it feels like a very physical manifestation of clearing out what's happening in my brain, you know, tidying the stable, tidy mind, all of that kind of thing. Yeah, that really works for me. And I think as well, the thing with horses is, you know, we go back to this whole making a plan thing. You can sort of talk it through with them. I mean, it, out to people outside of the horse world, they think you're bonkers, but you can talk it through to this being that's listening to you and not passing judgment on anything that you're saying and thinking. And that actually has a really healthy benefit as well, you know, I find.
Yeah, again, you're absolutely right. It's sometimes just by expressing like what's going on, by getting it out of your head, what you're doing is you're shifting the blood supply in your brain away from that emotional thinking system, that's the part that feels the stress, through to that more logical, rational system that allows you to make the plan. And absolutely, having someone that isn't going to judge and is just going to listen, whether that's a person or your animal, is really important.
And as you said, as long as you can get past the bit about talking to yourself and feeling a bit strange doing it, once you're, you know, once you get into it, it's all good. So what then are some of the practical things we can do? Say you're at a competition and you're having a bit of a moment in the lorry.
Yeah.
Are there any kind of mindfulness things that you can do to kind of bring yourself back into a better place, reduce that stress level a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first thing would be to say, if was something that was happening, it's really normal. It's a very normal thing to be happening. So don't beat yourself up for that or start thinking that it's, you know, it's a sign of impending doom, something's going to go wrong. It's completely normal. A lot of people do feel like that. Again, the first thing I would say is, ideally, you want to be thinking about, where is this stress coming from, and having a plan to manage that. And often if we start thinking about that at a competition, what is it that you're really worried about? So is it that, you know, I'm not going to do very well, and then I'll worry about what people might think about me, or I'll worry that I've let people down if it doesn't go well? Or is it that you recognize, actually, my identity is quite tied with sport, so if it doesn't go well, that's going to challenge how I feel about myself. So once you've got the real underlying reason for the stress identified, then actually we can work with that. And often then bringing in perspective is really helpful. So thinking about, you know, this thing that's really stressing me right now, at some point it's going to be over. And to think about, you know, in a week's time, am I still going to be stressing about this? In a month's time, am I still going to be stressing about it? In a year's time? And often, if we play it through like that, eventually you think, no, actually, it puts it into context. It's really not that important. But like you said, there are some kind of in the moment things when we start to notice some of those physiological symptoms that can be helpful. And the first of those is recognizing that what's going on is just a physiological response. So rather than interacting with those feelings and sensations, recognizing it's just a physiological response. And sometimes you'll pay money for that same response. So if you like going riding roller coasters, or if you go and watch a scary film, the same physiological feelings, you will label them excitement rather than stress. So recognizing that this is just my body's physiology, that's all it is. And because it's a physiological response, actually focusing on something like breathing can be really helpful. And a really simple thing to think about there is making your out breath longer than your in breath. Because if you do that, you're going to be stimulating your parasympathetic nervous system, which is going to slow everything down and help kind of facilitate that relaxation response. So going to your breathing is a really simple thing to do. And you mentioned mindfulness as well. So something I often get people to think about is called 3-2-1 technique. So what are three things that I can see right now? What are two things that I can hear? And what's one thing that I can feel? And the point in that is really to try and get somebody out of their head and out of their thoughts into their body, into the wider world around them.
Yeah, thank you. That's really helpful, and hopefully something that, yeah, the people listening can try next time they feel themselves in that situation. And I think the breathing one is very key, because that's such an easy thing you can do. It doesn't matter where you are, what situation is, you can just, if you focus on your breathing, it can just bring everything down nicely. And talking about competitions and stuff, obviously, you know, you're working with a lot of our athletes on the World Class Programme. And you hear this a lot in elite sport, of people thriving under pressure. And, you know, the higher the stress, you know, they can do it. They can use that stress to kind of bring out good results. Now, how is that kind of coming from the same ideas? Or is that how are we using stress for a positive outcome as opposed to a negative one?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think it relies on people knowing themselves really well to know that for them, what's the optimum level of stress that helps them perform at their best? Because if you think about it, like with no stress at all, a lot of people, that you're just going to be too laid back. In fact, you're going to be bored. So it's about working out what level of stress kind of do I need that helps me perform at my best, and how do I try and create and facilitate that without going overboard and feeling too stressed. And think about what I said at the start as well. It's about people's perception of the situation. So there will be some riders that view competition as stressful and a threat, and if we see it as it's something that's a threat, then it's going to bring about that fight, flight, freeze response that I talked about earlier, and all these different signs and symptoms. If we reframe it and we see it as an opportunity, it's an opportunity to go and show how good I am and show off all the hard work that I've put in training, we're less likely to be going into competition in that kind of threat, stressed state.
And as you say, that sort of reframing of it, yeah, it's almost is going to improve the situation and make it, as I say, make it into a positive as opposed to a scary thing, right? This is my moment. I can do this. I can show everyone how great I am. And because you're feeling that way, you almost get a self-fulfilling prophecy, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, we've talked a lot about what you can do when you're in a moment of stress, when, you know, the stress is high already. But are there things we can do in our daily lives before we even get to that situation that can help kind of fortify our mental well-being, so we're a bit more resilient in moments where the stress might pop up?
Yeah, I think, again, to me, that would come back to what I mentioned before in terms of knowing your signs and symptoms, knowing when you're starting to recognize those first signs of stress for you. And when you recognize those first signs, go into that, what's the plan? What am I going to do about this? And having some of your kind of fail safe things, so like I said before, whether that's connection with other people, getting outside, like catching the stress really early, and then having a plan for how, you know, what am I going to do about it in this moment before it gets too high.
Yeah, and I think well, going back to that kind of that knowing yourself thing, and one of the examples I know we've used previously with the perform well side of things is that stress bucket idea, and the fact that, you know, we all have a certain capacity for stress, and, you know, the water's dripping in, the water level's rising, and when it overflows, that's when you hit that stressful moment and you need to employ some of the techniques we've talked about. But if you're, you know, if you've got the coping mechanisms and things in place, like you're having your plan and getting to the root of the issues, then you can sort of bring that level down. I hope I've explained that correctly.
Yeah, no, you've explained that really well, Rachel. if you imagine everyone's kind of stress bucket is a different size, which indicates we've all got an ability to tolerate more or less stress depending on lots of factors. But yeah, we imagine as we go through life, this stress bucket is filling up with water through all the different experiences that get thrown at us. And what we want to make sure is we've got a way of letting some of the water out. And that's, again, that's the importance of knowing yourself. What are some of the things that I can do day to day that are going to let some of the water out rather than it just keeps getting topped up and then it overflows? And then that's when we lead into some of that chronic stress that we mentioned before.
Yeah, definitely. And it's, and again, it's that appreciation that we're all different, because for some people that might be, you know, going out and being around other people and doing lots of activities and things like that. And other people, sometimes you just need to go and sit in a quiet room by yourself for a bit and decompress a bit. So yeah, it's about having those techniques that work for you and you personally in your arsenal, and knowing that now's the time to bring out the ones that really work in that situation.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Rachel. It's recognizing we're all unique individuals, and what relieves stress for one person might feel really stressful to somebody else.
Bringing it into this whole, you know, we've talked a bit about connecting with other people, and obviously I've mentioned there that sometimes it's going out and being around other people that works for them. It can be, you know, bringing in those other people can sometimes be a bit tricky, particularly if you're in a high stress situation and you're all in your head and you're feeling a bit about everything. What's the best way to kind of have that conversation with someone, maybe because, you know, you want to kind of bring them in but you don't really know how? Or alternatively, if you flip the situation and you're around someone who you think is having a bit of a crisis and you want to talk to them about it but you don't really feel that you know how to yet, how's the best way to approach that, do you think?
Yeah, again, that's a really good point. At the end, we might actually spot signs of stress in somebody else before they've even noticed it. So I think in that situation, it would be to approach it really gently, because they might not be aware, but let them know what it is that you've noticed that you think you're seeing. I think having somebody that will just listen without judging is what's really important and what's really helpful. And often then, like I said before, it's by talking about the thing that's stressing us, then it's that emotional system that kind of lets it out, and then the logical rational system can kick in and think, right, now what is the plan? So I think it's having someone that will listen, show that they understand how difficult what you're going through is. If it's appropriate, someone that can reassure you that what you're going through now will pass, it's not going to last forever, it is going to get better. And then maybe someone that can offer some of that practical support if you're struggling yourself to think, I just don't know what to do, I don't know what the plan is. I think it's important to recognize that if we do start to notice more of those signs of chronic stress in somebody, so if someone is maybe constantly tired, they're tearful, they're depressed, they're, you know, unable to face normal activities, work and friends and things like that, small tasks seem enormous, someone's maybe using substances to cope, those would all be indicators of chronic stress that probably needs, you know, some more professional support. So I think signposting there to a GP who can then signpost elsewhere would be really important.
And I think the key thing with this is, and it's the same with a lot of difficult conversations, is that empathy, using empathy.
Yeah.
And rather than saying, oh yeah, no, I know how you feel, and this, you know, and getting sort of trying to take over the conversation, it's, as you've said there, it's very important to do the listening and the empathy side of things, which some of us find easier than others. But yeah, I think that's just a very important part of that conversation that needs to be acknowledged, is sometimes it's better to be the ears that listen rather than the mouth that gives suggestions.
Yeah, and that naturally what we want to do as humans is jump in and help. We want to offer suggestions, and sometimes it's taking that step back, like you say, to just like put yourself in that person's shoes and listen and show that, God, I understand, and what you're going through sounds really hard. I can acknowledge how difficult this is for you and recognize what you're going through and how hard you're trying. Sometimes that in itself is enough. I think sometimes we worry about saying the right thing. And again, it's not black and white. There's not a right or a wrong thing to say. Just being with someone through a difficult time and showing that empathy in itself is really helpful, and sometimes can help them to move forwards.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned there about sort of some of the sort of places to signpost and things like that, if you know, if you think that there's something maybe a bit more serious going on. But even if you just want to find out a bit more about stress and some of the things we've talked about today, where would be some good resources that people could go to find out a bit more information?
Yep, absolutely. So a book that I will recommend that I think is fabulous is called Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers, and that's by Robert Sapolsky. So for anyone that really wants to dive into it a bit more, I would recommend that. If you just want some, you know, some quick busting stress strategies, things like the NHS website has got some really good stuff on there. The Mind website has got some good stuff on there as well.
Brilliant. And of course, there are also the other sort of mental health charities and helplines and things like that. If the stress is getting really quite extreme and you are having some real mental well-being problems, then there are lots of sort of 24-hour helplines and things out there as well that can help you if that's the point you're at when you need that extra support.
Yeah, absolutely. And Samaritans would be a great go-to in that instance.
Yeah, and Riders Minds is another one as well with a very much equestrian focus.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as we kind of come to the end of what has been a really interesting chat today, and hopefully everyone listening agrees with me there, what then, Lainey, would be some of your take-home messaging then for people who are listening to this?
So the first one would be, think about how you are perceiving stress, and can we start to, instead of seeing it as this huge negative, see it as it's a sign for me to act and to do something. I would say self-reflection is really important. We've spoken quite a lot about knowing yourself, knowing your signs and symptoms of stress, so that as soon as you start to notice those, then you can move into that resilience phase, use that resilience hormone, be proactive and make your plan, have your plan for managing it, rather than just kind of sitting with the discomfort of stress. And then I guess linked to what we've just spoken about as well, if it does get to the point when you're feeling very overwhelmed, those emotions are feeling too much, then absolutely like reach out for support. And I hope Rachel will be able to put some of those links on here as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. We can certainly signpost to those. We do try and put sort of that sort of thing, obviously, on our social media. And so, yeah, we will make sure that we flag those best places to go so that people know where to go and to get that extra support. Because that is, as we said many times, that's the way to do it, is to make sure you've got that support network around you to help you through. Thank you so much, Lainey, for giving up your time and for joining us. I hope you've also enjoyed talking to me as well and sharing some of your wisdom.
Yeah, very much. And like you say, Rachel, I just really hope people listening can take something useful from what we've chatted about.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for everyone at home who's been listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Make sure that you've checked back to some of our previous episodes as well. There have been some really interesting ones recently. We did concussion last month. There were two great episodes on concussion. There was Female Health Week, where we covered a whole range of topics relating to female health. Lainey also joined us for that one. We did an episode on nutrition and body image as well, so make sure you check out that. And there was also the Equine Health Week back in January for lots of very, very equestrian-focused content there. We will have plenty more episodes coming up later this year. There's obviously a big event happening this summer, and hopefully we can touch on that at some point. And some other ones as well coming up. So we hope you can join us for those. You'll find all the old episodes as well, which I forgot to mention, wherever it was that you found this one, both on the major podcast platforms and also through our website. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us, and we hope that you will join us again soon.